Thanks, everybody, for joining us today for a call where Bridget Betzer will give us some tips on qualifying prospects. So, Bridget, I will turn it over to you.
Sounds good. Thank you. So when thinking about pre-qualifying prospects, I'm going to talk a little bit today about what I do and what's worked for me. And, you know, this is the process that is flexible, but we're going to talk kind of about the key components that I use in working with individuals up until the point where we sit down and do the consultation to create the business model. And I'll remind everyone, if you don't mind, to mute your lines, because I know Tracy's trying to get a good recording here, and I hear a little bit of background noise there. So if you can mute your own line, that'd be great if you're not muted. Thanks. We're not going to jump into the PFAs right away, because I think when I look at my journey with FranNet, one of the things that I did early on was I kind of met with everybody. And that was per recommendation.
For FranNet, you should too.
Can you guys mute your lines? Sorry, I'm not sure who that was, but could you mute your lines, please? I just heard somebody talking there. But in my journey with FranNet, one of the things that I did early on was meet with everybody. And that was really good as I kind of got my system down in meeting with everybody. But as I grew with FranNet, and I'm now almost 3.5 years in, I realized that meeting with everybody was not the best use of my time anymore, and I needed to get more selective, and I needed to figure out how to get more selective. And a part of that was more so in my mindset, and that's really what I wanted to start with, is our mindset. So when you think about FranNet and our mission, you know, one of the things that we really focus on as a group is being local and local franchise consultants. So I had to take a step back and think about what that meant, because that's what I was marketing myself as a local franchise consultant. And so although our services are free, I needed to put myself in the mindset that people are coming to me to be their consultant. People are coming to me because they need me to have those hard conversations with them on whether they're going to be a fit or not. And so I kind of had a change in my thought process when I started working with clients and started, you know, qualifying them harder and, you know, creating better lead to close ratios. I got myself in that mindset that I'm their consultant. They're coming to me for information. And, you know, we can take it or leave it, but I need to have those hard conversations in order to do all of us justice, because we are local. I see my clients, whether they become franchisees or not, at the grocery store, at church, at school events, you name it, I see them everywhere. And so it's in my best interest as a consultant to be very focused and honest. And, yes, I want to do deals, but I feel like I have better results in doing deals, taking the approach and having that mindset. So hopefully that makes sense to everybody. So that was kind of the first thing in this whole pre-qualifying process that changed for me, was that mindset. But then, you know, it goes back again to that local focus. I meet face-to-face almost every prospect before the PFA comes in. And I could do that in a variety of different ways. I could meet them at a networking event, and, you know, that happens quite often. They could sign up for a seminar that I'm doing on a local level and attend the seminar, and that's where I meet them. Or if it's an internet lead, I will actually recommend that we have coffee and meet face-to-face. And this is usually all done before that PFA comes in. Very rarely do I get a PFA in where I haven't met the person already. So let's just think about this process a little bit. My, you know, the way I would like it to happen is that I meet the client face-to-face, whether it's before or after a seminar, and we have coffee. And it's really a, you know, get-to-know-each-other meeting. Probably lasts anywhere between 20 minutes and a half hour, and it's an opportunity for me to ask that individual some pointed questions. And I know FranNet Corporate has some questions on FranConnect that are kind of pre-qualifying questions. And you don't have to ask all of them during this coffee meeting, but you'll pick and choose those that you think would work best. And sometimes I just want to sit down and I want to hear from that client, what intrigued you about franchising? Why did you approach me to learn more? Why did you attend the seminar? I ask a lot of those open-ended questions, why? And you know, how can you achieve your goals or how you see this working for you? Are there others involved in the process? So I just kind of get the conversation going and learn about that person. And I do more listening than talking at these coffee meetings. Ultimately, though, I am going to be bringing a folder of information to the client during that coffee meeting. I put a couple flyers in one of our FranNet folders. I have a PFA flyer that I use, an About FranNet flyer that I use, What is a Franchise, an article on Master Franchising. I put all that in a folder, and I hand it to them, and then, you know, that's kind of how I wrap up the meeting, is I talk about who FranNet is, I talk about my experience. I want to gain trust with the client right there from that moment on by showing them that I truly am the local expert in franchising. So I talk just a little bit about myself and my background, and then give them some information on FranNet, and then do a very high level overview of the process that I take in working with clients from the time they engage my services to the time they purchase a franchise or decide not to purchase a franchise. And so that's, kind of the first coffee meeting that we take. But I do also, at that point, I am telling them that I require them to complete an educational program on franchising or business ownership options, whether it's attending one of the live national webinars on business ownership options or career alternatives, whatever we decide to call it, whether they come to a live seminar, or whether I forward them the recorded seminar or recorded webinar to view at their leisure. Either way, I want to make sure that they're completing one of those seminars or webinars, because then I can, as we go through the process, I can anchor back to that program and make sure that we use that material is so good that we want to make sure that we use that material in our whole process and anchor back to it from time to time. And so if I send them the recorded webinar, one of the things that we'll do or I'll do is I'll circle back around with them after the webinar is completed. And usually what they'll do is they'll submit the PFA pretty soon thereafter reviewing the recorded webinar. I will then circle back around with them on the phone, and I'll just ask them what they thought of the webinar. And if they say, give me kind of an open-ended, comment like, oh yeah, it was really good, and I'll ask them a more pointed question about a specific piece of the webinar. And you can choose anything, but I'm just testing them to make sure they really did watch it. Like I might say, okay, so which of those, building blocks to success did you think were going to be most important to you as you explore business ownership? Or, maybe we want to talk about financials, and usually you don't necessarily go there immediately, but that could be one of the questions too. What did you think about the different hierarchies of financial investments related to franchising? How about those myths, and debunking those myths? Which one were you most surprised on? So you want, that's one of the ways that I qualify them and make sure they've completed the educational process. And then once they've completed the seminar or webinar and make sure they do that, that's when they usually submit the PFA. So if the PFA then comes in, I get the we get the results via email. I will forward the PFA via email to the client, and basically just a real short email that says, thanks for completing your personal franchise assessment. Here are your results for review. I'd like to schedule a 15-minute telephone call to discuss your results and the next steps in your franchising search. Please suggest a few days and times that you're available. I don't tell them that they're automatically qualified. I don't tell them that we're going to schedule a consultation or not. I leave it very open-ended, like I want to discuss the next steps with you. So what we'll do is we'll get on a phone call, and again, I want to make sure that they reviewed the PFA, so I'll just ask them questions about it. And I don't know if we can go through a couple of these PFAs that Tracy sent off to you, but for example, Charles, if I were to open Charles up, and let's just say I'm having a conversation with Charles on his PFA. Obviously, if I look at the PFA, one of the first things I do is I look at the financials. So in Charles' situation, his financials, his net worth is pretty strong, especially for the Grand Rapids area. I'd say that that's a strong net worth. If their net worth is 150 or below, that's going to be an area that I want to talk about when I talk with them about their PFA, but I don't go there first. It's actually the last thing I talk about. But I know at this point in looking at the PFA, I think financially this could be a good candidate. But when I get Charles on the phone, the first thing that I'm going to say is, okay, Charles, open up here at a client at a glance page. It's a summary page that tells me, there's detail in there for you to read, but, here's a couple of things that I take a look at when I look at your fit for franchising. And, again, that's actually me anchoring back to my seminars. I put a big emphasis on fit and making sure that franchising will work for them because sometimes I don't think it will. So in this situation with Charles, compliance is average. Some people, for me, when I see people fall in low compliance, I might touch on that. I don't really touch on the values and motives, but on the compliance thing, I do touch on that. Average or high, I think, is okay to move forward on. If they're low compliance, I want to talk to them about that and see if they can give me some information on why they, may think they fell into that category. Core competencies look good. Work style, I don't focus on a whole lot. I go down to sales potential. That's kind of a big one for me because in any franchise, you've got to have some ability to talk to people and communicate and have a business development mindset. So if they're falling under the low sales potential, that's going to tell me if they're lower average that they probably would do better in something more retail. If they're, average, above average, or high, they obviously can probably get out there and do some networking. Cold calling, they're going to want to fall under the high or very high in my mind. That's just my thought process in working with people. You may have a different thought process there. But I do talk about that. And so I do, cover that with them and talk about how, there does need to be, a mindset that you have to build a business and here's where I see you best fit. And that's going to correlate back to the financial piece for me. So for Charles, with his finances, I could probably get him into, if he fell under the low sales potential, I could probably, with his financial picture, get him into, like, hair care. But for some people, that wouldn't work. So as you can see, all these pieces for me kind of tie into the financial piece, too, a little bit. Now, business development is the other part that I look at under this summary page. And for Charles, he didn't fall into any of these categories. And that kind of confused me because it doesn't happen very often, although it's happened a few times lately. So usually, and this is my thought process, if somebody falls under contractor, they're going to be a good consultant. So there's somebody who has created an expert skill in the corporate world, and now they're going to go out and be a consultant in that same category. So let's just, to give you an example, graphic design. Somebody worked corporately for graphic design, doing graphic design. Maybe they got let go. You're looking at business ownership. They fell under the contractor section. I would recommend that they create their, become a consultant for a business on graphic design or something like that. If they fall under the entrepreneur category, under business development here, that tells me that they're not necessarily, they could be an okay fit for franchising, but you're probably going to want to partner them up with a younger franchisor that has a flexible operating system that allows them a lot of autonomy if they're going to look at franchising. Either that or, they want to create their own systems and they want to do things on their own, be kind of go on their own way. They might be better suited to launch a business of their own. But if they don't have that idea to launch a business of their own and are entrepreneur-focused, I would definitely partner them up with a young franchisor that's looking for, so they can have that autonomy to operate things a little bit more how they want to. Not so stringent. And then, obviously, if they fall under a single unit, multi-unit, or area developer, then I feel like I know that they're a pretty good fit for franchising at that point. So I have those discussions with people here, and, I wouldn't necessarily rule anyone out if they fell under contractor or entrepreneur, but those are areas where I'd want to have some discussion and do some digging and make sure I talk to them about past experiences and what they're, again, on the phone call here, not just the consultation, because I'll revisit all of this during the consultation. But just to kind of get an overview of that, I want them to convince me that they want to move forward in franchising and that they are, looking at franchising as a serious option. Now, with Charles, believe it or not, he did become a client of mine. And he did look at a few concepts with me, but he ended up finding a concept on his own and buying a franchise. It was a multiple unit franchise that he bought, unfortunately, a young, new franchisor with only a few units. But, you know, so that's Charles. Now, if we go back and look at Michael, I'm just opening it up here. So with Michael, his net worth was $136,500. He was on the lower end. So, you know, obviously I opened this up and I thought, oh, gosh, you know, there could potentially be some opportunity here. He's got $35,000 in his IRA, $65,000 in cash. I don't have enough information looking at this financial picture to disqualify him or qualify him. But again, I don't go there immediately. I first take him to the client at a glance page, and I, you know, again, show them why you are the expert, and take them through the summary page, just like we just did with Charles here a minute ago. You know, everything on the summary page looked great for Michael. I don't really have any concerns. He's single unit, multi-unit area developer, above average sales, high compliance, you know, great core competencies. I don't see any concerns on this at a glance page. So as I go through this with him, you know, I'm going to tell him that, you know, I think he could be a great fit for franchising, but, you know, my concerns are on the financial side. Can we go there? Do you mind having a conversation over the phone about the financial picture here? And so I would ask him to tell me a little bit more. Does your spouse work? Do you have household income coming in from your spouse or another area that's not noted here? How did you plan to fund the business? You know, when you started this process, did you have an idea of how you would fund the business? Let's talk about that. And then I would say, let's talk about your options. Now, with this situation here, though, I will tell you that Michael ended up not engaging in the process. Michael did not want a full-time owner-operator model, and he wanted something retail. And so, as I'm sure you guys can see from the financial picture, we couldn't make that happen. And I'm not going to convince, you know, I didn't want to convince him, you know, to look at something else that wasn't going to meet his goals or make him happy, because we all know that ends up in failure. So Michael is not a client currently investigating franchises. The only thing that we did talk about, he may circle back in the future. He has parents who were looking at potentially funding him in the business, and so he's last we talked, he was going to further discuss that with them and see if they would be willing to jump into the picture so that he could look at something more retail. If that happens, though, because I just this week had another client with a very similar financial picture come into the pipeline, you know, he didn't quite have this net worth. It was still a little bit lower, but he wanted to bring in investors. So when somebody does that with me, just because they say they have investors and they can get the money, I don't believe them. I make them bring the other parties to the table, have the other parties complete the PFA, and actually come to the consultation. So that's kind of how I pre-qualify prospects. If I get to the point where we do this PFA review over the phone with them and I'm feeling like they have the pain and I'm convinced that they could qualify for some franchises, I will then schedule the consultation. I will be honest. I know there's some consultants out there that require spouses or significant others to be at the consultations. I encourage that and like that to happen, but I've done plenty of deals where the spouse or significant other has not been at the consultation as well. So, Tracy, is there anything that I missed?
I don't think so. At this time, I'd like to open it up for questions from the group. Any questions for Bridget?
Hey, Bridget, this is John McClellan. How are you?
Hi, John.
Hey, Bridget. Brad and I ran into something, and I could throw it out to you and maybe the rest of the group as well. Is that in our presentation, when it gets to, you know, cost of franchises, and everybody gets excited usually in the group because we show, you know, percentages, and particularly when I'm with a score SBDC where candidly, you know, some of the candidates don't have the net worth, What I found that's been really kind of hurt is that it says we have, 13%, I think it is, there are franchises for 50,000 or under.
Yeah.
And the reality of it is that we don't sell any franchises for 50,000 or under. And,
right.
So what I've done, and Brad and I've done, is we've changed that to be, we put 100%, we've just put under $100,000, 30%. And got away from that under 50,000 because I've got questions about that and we don't have it and so that plus do you have anything in particular? I don't know if there's anything magical, but I've just got a couple, like when somebody comes into you or you get a PFA and they've got a net worth of $50,000 where you just they have no money. I mean, do you hate to say it? Do you bother going through the rest? Do you just go right there, right out of the gate, as opposed to spending time, analyzing their PFA, realizing they're never going to buy a franchise?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question, and I have had that situation come up, and I'll be honest, I never analyze the PFA. Like, I open it up probably 5 minutes before the phone call that I have with the individual to go through it. I look at the financials, and then, yes, I do go through the summary page. But as you can see, this whole call, going through everything I've gone through, has only been 25 minutes. And so going through that really only takes a couple of minutes with that candidate. And what it's doing is it's building trust, and it's showing that you are an expert, and you never know who that client knows that does have money. And so I want to make sure that they experience the same thing that anybody would experience in working with me, because they're going to go out and talk about that. And I'll say to them, can I be very honest with you? And I'll even give some facts even when it comes to that. One of the biggest reasons for failure in franchising or in business ownership is undercapitalization. So that's although that can be a hard topic to talk about, we need to go there. Are you comfortable with that? Here's what I see. You're light on net worth. I really think you'd be pushing it. I don't think you have enough to cover an investment of a business effectively, as well as your personal living expenses. And I don't even know what your personal living expenses are, but if we were to look at bare minimum, you're not quite there, and I don't want you to stretch yourself too thin, because believe it or not, we do need to look at worst case scenarios when it comes to financials. What happens if it takes you longer to break even than you expect? Are you going to have the ability to get additional funding, or have access to additional funding, whatever it might be? And they actually have been more thankful that I've had that conversation, because I think, again, it's going to build trust, and it'll help you in the long run.
Okay. All right, thanks. Hey, Tracy?
Yes.
I understand that John Blair is looking at, potentially redoing, maybe in conjunction with you, the exploring career alternatives, that whole webinar. I just ask that you take a look at that slide and consider, what we're saying and because we're kind of asking ourselves for some, we're asking ourselves for some problems when we talk about franchises under $50,000.
Hey, John.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Cindy Rayfield, and I do the national webinar with Tracy Rickman. And I do have to say, when I get to that slide, because I follow the slides that we have that we use for training. And I do mention on there, this slide shows under 50,000, but I do kind of preface it a lot. I feel the same way you do, along the lines of, you have to be realistic about the concepts that you might find in that category. And I talk about our sweet spot, that sweet spot is, where we feel like we have the most success. So I kind of position it to say, typically we can find things under $100,000, but your options are going to be very limited.
Gotcha. Okay, thanks.
If that helps. I don't know if that helps. I hope it does.
No, it does. Thank you.
Any other questions?
You're just so thorough, Bridget, that there's no questions.
Bridget, this is Charlie.
Hi, Charlie.
Hey, is there a dollar figure in your mind that is the cutoff between, go or no go, all else being equal?
I think it's more so net worth, because of the franchisors that we're representing, and they are pretty much sticklers on the net worth. Some will vary a little bit, but if you look at the net worth requirements, I look at that lowest net worth requirement, and then I think about you know, where does that need to be? So I usually look at net worth of 150 or higher. Better if it's 200. We've got more to work with. And I'll be honest with the client and have that conversation. You know, the good franchisors have a network requirement, and we do have to pre-qualify for that. That's my job. And you're going to not have many options if you're at 150 or whatever, so you might want to wait and build your net worth. So I do go there. When it comes to cash on hand, think about, you know, obviously when you glaze over those PFAs and start looking, you start to have concepts come in your mind as you're talking with people and you're looking at their PFAs as to how, you know, what would be a good fit for them. So then I think about how much that costs and do they have cash and the qualifications to get an SBA loan. So, like, you know, obviously if it's $100,000, they're going to need $30,000 to $45,000 in their 401k or cash to roll over or to pull out, I guess I would say.
You know, Charlie, another thing I would think about is always, you know, in their mind, tell them, you know, you got to have 6 months to live on. So it's like, you know, when you're looking at that number and saying, okay, here's the investment level, but you're also going to need another 6 months. So, what do you, you know, how much do you need to live on a month? Is it $8,000, $10,000, whatever that might be, and add that on to it?
Yep. And I actually tell my clients they need a year of expenses just to be safe.
Thank you.
Bridget, it's Kathy Peck-Tash.
Hi.
Hey, lady. The gentleman who invested in a different franchise than what we represented, did he tell you that up front? Or did it
he
occur
did.
During the process? Uh-huh.
During the consultation, he did tell me that he had began investigation on a couple of concepts. It was actually a mosquito concept. So he had already inquired with Mosquito Squad, and then he had two other brand new mosquito businesses that he was inquiring with. So I obviously threw Mosquito Joe in there and had him continue on with Mosquito Joe and Mosquito Squad. Mosquito Squad didn't have the territory available he wanted, and Mosquito Joe was a little pushy for him in his sales process.
Yeah, I noticed on his PFA that he did mention the mosquito he was interested in. I've had that happen to me a couple times this year, and so I do go ahead and work with him, too, and just see how it rolls. I was just curious if he had disclosed that to you.
Yeah, and, you know, during the consultation, we did have that conversation about why he was looking at them. And, you know, at the end, the model we created did go well with that kind of concept.
Yep.
It did fit, and so I was not going to pull him away from that.
Okay, well, thanks, and I really appreciated your comments about client at a glance and how you analyze that. So thanks for that info.
Oh, you're welcome.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else?
I have a question, Bridget.
When
you say that you encourage but don't require spouses to come to the consultation, do you decide on not requiring that based on their buyer motive or some other factor?
There's really no science to it. I think it's intuition. I guess it would just be how I feel about how things are going during the conversation. For example, I have a gentleman who came to the consultation, but his wife has breast cancer and just had surgery, so I didn't, you know, make him bring her to the consultation because he wanted to get moving, and she couldn't make it to the consultation for obvious reasons. For others, the wife is working and, you know, doesn't want to take time off from work, but I might have the spouse might come to the coffee meeting, or perhaps we do the consultation, and then I'll call and I'll say, the franchisors will require Susie to be on the call as you go through this investigation process, and it would be great if we could schedule our first call where she's on the call too because I want to hear her feedback. So I might get them involved in a different way, but I won't necessarily always make them come to the consultation.
Okay, great.
Anyone hey, Bridget, this is Sarah.
Hi, Sarah.
Hello. I was just going to add on that too is I ask how that spouse feels about them being in business.
Yeah.
Because if they, because I had a client buy, I never met the spouse, that I, every phone call I would ask, how, you know, how's she feeling about it? And
yeah.
he would tell me she was supportive, she was his biggest cheerleader. At the beginning, if I think they're not supportive, then that, just kind of like what you were saying, not really a science, kind of intuition, I might recommend that we not meet until they feel more comfortable.
Get on board, yeah. And I use the analogy of buying a house. I mean, it's happened where people have bought houses without their spouses for various reasons, but usually an investment of that size, you're going to get your spouse or significant other involved right from the beginning. So I definitely encourage it, but I just don't make it happen all the time.
Hey, Bridget, this is John Adams.
Hi, John.
Just a question on the second page of the PFA, of the QSR, sorry. Under business characteristics, how committed are you to being in business in the next 6 months?
Uh-huh.
Do you put any weight on their answer there? Or how do you address that if it's a low number?
I do put weight there. Usually that will come up during the PFA review call. If it's a lower number, I will ask them why is it so low, what their time frame is. But quite honestly, I've never had anything I don't think under 5. And usually if it's a 5, it's because they're not quite educated enough and don't know what to expect.
Yeah, I got a 0 last week. It really threw me. Like, why are we even having this conversation?
Yeah, and I would probably ask them that.
And yet she's, she's going rapidly through her conversations with the Zors. It just kind of threw me.
Did you ask her why she put 0 there?
Probably not well enough.
Okay.
So that's why I was asking you how you address that.
Yeah, I mean, I just, again, going back to what I said at the very beginning, it's important for us as consultants to be curious and ask the hard questions, and it took me a long time to get there. But that's, they're coming to us for that, free service or not, is to ask the hard questions and figure it out. That would be a hard question to ask. And I might even preface it with that. This is a really interesting situation. I haven't had this happen to me before. And this is a hard question for me to ask, but why, I'm wondering, why you put 0 for the answer here? What drove you to put that? Is there something that I'm missing in your situation here that I need to know about?
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how much of a help that was, but.
Hey, Bridget, it's Frank Dunn. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm okay. Really quick question. If we can all remember back to the annual conference in the fall, the last day, there was some discussion about when to actually do the recommendations of the concepts. And some people end their consultations by doing it. Some confess mm-hmm. to scheduling one follow-up call, and some might even heard do it, on a second follow-up call. I'm just kind of wondering, based on your experience, do you feel like the pre-screening negates the need for a follow-up call to talk about the concepts?
I do the concept presentations right at the end of my consultation. So I'll do the consultation to build the model. I'll take a 15 to 20-minute break where I look at my notes, pull information up, refresh myself on how what I want to present, and then I bring the client back in and I present the concept. And during that consultation, I've already collected a lot of information during this PFA review call and pre-qualifying call and coffee meeting and all that. And so I am able to, in my mind, I feel like I can do the deep digging during the consultation and really be effective at creating that business model and understanding what they're looking for at that point.
And insofar as the model is concerned, do you actually show them something during that initial consultation?
I don't show them anything during the initial consultation, but I do tell them that I'm going to be taking a lot of notes and that I'm going to create a flow chart that they can use kind of as a yardstick as they go through the research and compare and contrast different franchise concepts, and something that we'll refer back to regularly.
Got it. Okay. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Any other questions for Bridget?
Bridget, just clarify that on that last point. So your process is, you know, you meet them somewhere. You haven't met them face-to-face. You have a coffee. You give them an assignment, make sure they have the education piece, do the PFA, the short follow-up phone call to decide if to meet. And then when you meet, you meet with them, you build the model, you say, okay, let's take a quick 15-minute break, walk around the block, come back, here's three ideas, present those concepts, and then refer to franchisors, and then you're into the process. Is that right? Or do you have as Leslie described in October, a second in-person consultation?
No, you described it correctly. I don't do it the way Leslie does it.
So it's the way I described it?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh. That's what works for me best.
Well, it's what works for me best, too.
Anyone else? Okay, well, thank you, Bridget, for sharing your time and experience with us.
You're welcome.
And for all who have joined our call today, this has been recorded and will be posted on Fran Connect today, so stay tuned for the email.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.